Hey everyone, this is Tracy Barnett, the designer and narrator for Iron Edda Reforged Puppet Strings. This is the first episode of this podcast, and we're on the One Shot Network. How cool is that? I wanted to just drop in right here at the beginning of the episode. I do a bunch of introduction in this app. This is our session zero of this entire thing that we're doing. But today, on the day this drops, this is also the day that the Kickstarter for Iron Edda Reforged Season 1 is launching. In fact, they're happening right around the same time. So if you head over to Kickstarter and search for Iron Edda Reforged, you're going to find that project. The funding for this covers Jotunheim, which is the zine that has all the rules that we in fact are making as you listen to this podcast. It covers Puppet Strings, which is this actual play, an actual play test that has me and Alex and B and Jeff, and it's just an absolute delight. And it also covers a video actual play series called In the Bubble, which is going to be produced once the Kickstarter wraps up. So from now, this launch day, there's about 3 weeks of funding. I really encourage you, if you enjoy this, head on over there and check it out, because I'm biased, obviously, but I think it's really, really cool and really, really worth it. Now, to convince you of that, without further ado, here's Puppet Strings. Jotunheim, the heart of the network of the gods. Miles of bone, sinew, and synapse. It's time to tear it all down. Ragnarok is coming, and it's you.
Hello. This is the first 0th something episode of this new venture. I'm Tracy Barnett, and I am recording this audio with three amazing people, with B. Zelda, Alex Flanagan, and Jeff Stormer. We're going to go around, and they're all going to introduce themselves real quick, and then I'm going to tell all you lovely listeners sort of what we're actually trying to do here. We went in a different order pre-recording, so I'm just going to kick it right to my left, Jeff Stormer.
Hello, my name is Jeff Stormer. I am a podcaster, game designer, and the unofficial official LARP designer of the Olive Garden restaurant. I am a producer of Party of One, which is an actual play podcast focused on two-player role-playing experiences, All My Fantasy Children, which is a character creation, storytelling, and world-building podcast. I have a bunch more things I could plug, but I feel awkward hogging the spotlight like this. So instead, I will just say, my pronouns are he, his, and I could not be conceivably more excited about being here for this show, because if you were to name three people that, like, I could wake up tomorrow and go, I want to record a thing with, it is the three people that I am sitting with at this table today.
Kick it to who you want to hear from next.
I'm going to throw it over to B.
I think you chose me because I'm always dancing in my chair. If you compliment me, I just, you know, little chair happy dances happen.
Well, big same, first of all.
All right. Hello, hello. I am B. Zelda. My pronouns are they, them. I am your non-binary busy B on the internet. I am a podcaster, a member of the Broadswords. I have appeared on One Shot Network. I am a prolific TTRPG streamer. If there's a TTRPG channel, I have probably streamed on it. And heck, I'm excited, but also really nervous because, like, I don't even want to talk about what I'm going to be doing, but it's going to be epic and I cannot wait.
Last, most certainly not least, Alex.
Hi, thank you. I am Alex Flanagan. I do a number of things. I am most notably, in this particular circumstance, I am the game master for A Horror Borealis on the One Shot Network, which is an actual play Monster of the Week show. I've also done a little bit of game design here and there, most notably the game Coffee Detective, which you may have heard or heard of or played in your own way, in your own living rooms. I hope that you have. It's completely unhinged. Please let me know if you did. And yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be playing along. I'm really excited to jump in. I know that everybody at this table has already said how cool this table is, but it's a cool table and it bears saying again.
And if you don't know who I am, like I said, I'm Tracy Barnett and I am a game designer, podcaster. My pronouns are they, them. Oh, Alex, your pronouns.
Oh, any.
Okay, fantastic. My pronouns are they, them. And this is, I guess, my project. I invited Jeff and Alex and B to be part of this. What this is an opportunity for us to, one, tell a cool story together, and two, to alpha test, stress test, figure out what the system is going to be for a new game called Iron Edda Reforged. If you're familiar with my previous Iron Edda games, you know that there are some basic things that are the same about all of them. Ragnarok is happening. humanity has chosen to bind itself to the bones of dead giants to fight it in some form or fashion. There are 9 warrior clans that everyone is a part of, and from there it can be whatever. The 2 that are existent right now, War of Metal and Bone and Iron Net Accelerated, are big. You are fighting against Ragnarok to protect your Holdfast, so on and so forth. This game is a little bit different. This time Ragnarok is happening, and it's you. In this game, you are playing the revolutionary insurgents who are hoping to free the 9 realms from the tyranny of the gods themselves. The gods have created corporations. They have subjugated or enthralled most of humanity. It's a big, high fantasy, Norse-inspired capitalistic nightmare, and it is your job as a player to fix that. So, this is the game that we're going to be playing. It is in an alpha stage right now. There are mechanics that are written for it that I have not rolled a single die for yet. I do not know if they're actually going to work, but we're going to find out together. We're also obviously recording this, and what we're going to be doing, the intent at this exact moment, is to record a series of episodes, test the mechanics, put the audio out alongside the alpha PDF that everyone can buy on my itch page, and then I'll do a revision, we'll do beta, and we'll come back to it. Who knows, that may change as time goes on and we begin these recordings, but that's the plan right now. So we're going to now dive into the actual sort of gameplay portion of this. To begin with that, we are going to do the thing that should be at the top of everyone's game sessions, yours and mine alike, and that is safety tools. The safety tools we're going to employ in this recording and these sessions are lines and veils. We'll do that right at the top, and we'll reiterate them in later episodes if need be. But then we're also going to be using Script Change by Bo Yeager Sheldon, which is basically a set of, I'm going to show my age here, VCR controls that allow you to pause, fast forward, rewind, do over content, and just make sure that we all have a common language to address how we want to handle scenes if there's something that comes up that is unexpected. Lines and veils are very simply lines or things that we do not wish to have in the game at all. They are hard outs. We will never have them come up. Those are things that we wish to kind of elide over. They happen, but they do not happen directly on camera, as it were. To kick it off up top, I will say that my hard lines are sexual assault of any kind. It's not a thing that I want to see in my games. And violence against children and animals are, those are my 3 hard lines. Most other things I can veil around or fast forward past if we need to, but those are my 3.
Can I ask a quick question about that?
Yes, please.
Because I think there's a clarifying point that I have the same veil, I have the same line against animals, but I think there's a question that I think comes with it, which is, I don't know if it'll necessarily come up, but I think it's an important kind of distinction to lay out. Is that limited to what we would describe as like real world animals, or does that include like fantastical things like like dragons or similar things?
Sure. For me, it includes things we would class as pets.
Got it. Got it. Perfect.
So yeah, if it's a dog or a cat, I don't want to talk about any harm coming to it. If one of the characters ends up with a pet, I don't want any harm to happen to it on camera, right? That's just not a thing that I'm interested in seeing. If harm does befall someone's pet, it can be a tragic thing and it can be a point in the story, right? Because sometimes stuff happens. I just don't want it described.
For sure. 100%. I really appreciate the clarification. I like checking in on that because it can come up sometimes in unusual circumstances.
Alex, do you have any lines that you wish to add?
I would like to place a veil on like specifically violence or gore related to eyes or tongues. We don't have to like hard cut it out entirely, but I just don't want to linger on the messy details.
Of course. Anything else?
No, I feel fairly comfortable and confident speaking up in the moment and, you know, moving around something if it shows up framed in a way that I don't love. But otherwise, I'm pretty game to tackle things and I trust this group to do so, you know, tastefully.
Fantastic. B, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, on the topic of, I guess, like the gore bits, nails. The soft bits of your nails, I do not like to hear about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, okay. See, it's, ugh. Do not like.
I didn't have that on my list until you mentioned it just now, now that you've been.
And now it's on every list.
It came up in a horror podcast I did recently, and I was super into it, but then I couldn't not be uncomfortable. And then when it was my turn to talk, I was just like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm in a feeling right now.
Yeah. I just put fingernails down on veils.
Nobody has fingernails here.
We're not all, at all smooth.
None.
Oh, gosh. No, I don't like that either.
Opening cans is a distinct challenge for us.
I use my teeth.
So many things you can't peel the stickers off of things.
Cool. No, I totally.
Beyond that, yeah, the regular isms. I know this is a bit of a dystopian world, but if racism cannot be like a main theme or topic, you know, transphobia, the ias and the isms, veiling those. I understand that it has a time and place in some stories that are told, but if we can handle it as respectfully as possible.
Yeah, just on that note, because we have, it's not the most diverse group in the world, but we have people who are definitely not cis here, and we have people who are definitely not white here. Like, I'm not interested in exploring those kinds of things. That's not the type of oppression necessarily that these corporations levy. You know, it's perhaps a little bit pie in the sky to imagine that kind of dystopia where those oppressions are just not part of everything. At the very least, they are likely not going to figure into the active story, because I feel that they very rarely add anything unless they are purely own voices projects that speak from lived experience. And I definitely don't have a lot of that in these regards, so it's not something I'm interested in putting on screen.
I feel like, to a certain point, the kind of story that we're telling, like, the totalitarianism depicted here is so absolute that there's no need to fragment communities.
Yeah.
You know, right? Like, when every single person is crushed beneath your heel, you don't really care if my gender is fucky. Like, it does not matter to you that you have no need of that being leveraged against me.
That's a very good way of putting that, Alex.
And yeah, I agree thoroughly. Like, I agree 100%. Like, I mean, I have a lot of this. That's probably like a line of mine is like, as a queer person, like if I wanted to, you know, be confronted with my sort of institutional traumas, I could open twitter.com. Like, I am more interested. There's so many ways that capitalism can crush us and demoralize us that like the ones that are particularly harmful to me at a given moment are not something that like I want to bring it to a table when it's fun time with friends. And like there's a time and a place to kind of explore those themes thoughtfully. But I think like if we're telling a cool bang 'em up story about you know, mythic heroes taking on the gods, it just doesn't feel like it's the time and place for me to kind of dig into those things.
To that note, I'm not particularly interested in a story about infighting in insular groups. I'm interested in a story that's about us building up a community to take on a greater force that's oppressing all of us. I'm not so much interested in a story where a bunch of, you know, tiny factions are ripping themselves to shreds trying to decide on the best way to do that.
Yeah, that's, I think that is not within the ethos of this game in general, right? Like, I think the game is about building up communities and finding the structural weaknesses of the totalitarian state in order to spread wide those cracks and take it down. Infighting, tearing groups apart is definitely a thing that does happen in these situations. It's also, again, to echo Jeff, if we want to see infighting, we just need to go online and we'll see plenty of it.
Yeah, I come to it from a perspective of superhero comics, and like there's a time and a place for the story of the superhero who's breaking the rules, but when the apocalypse is looming is not the time that I'm interested in exploring that story.
Yeah. And there's also something to be said for the opening line of the book, which I highly doubt I'm going to change no matter how many revisions I do. Ragnarok is coming, and it's you, right? This is the twilight of the gods. This is when the world is made anew through, yes, big, heaving, potentially violent change, but the gods are not the ones who survive this. That part of the story is written. We know this to be true. We just want to figure out how it happens. All right. Anything else anyone wants to add for lines and or veils?
I've got a few. A line on or a veil on teeth injuries. Just not interested in it. And I think that's the only thing I had. I think it's the only one. If something comes up, I'll mention it in play, but I don't think there's anything else that hasn't already been mentioned. Oh, actually one.
Okay.
Plagues and pandemics, a line on it. I'm not interested in exploring that in play. It is exactly the same scenario of I could look out my window, right? Like, I'm not interested.
Sure, definitely. So, lines and veils are set and formalized. All right. So the first thing that we are going to do, and the first thing that is done in any game of Iron Edda, is to establish where we're starting the story. In this case, we're going to be starting the story in the area of the Nine Realms that you all chose, which is Jotunheim. Just so the people listening have a bit of background, I'm going to read direct from the text as written, so we can all be firmly grounded in what Jotunheim is and what's going on. The oldest stories say that Odin and his brothers killed their father Ymir and used his bones to make the world. His skull, the sky. His blood, the rivers. If it worked then, the gods figured, why not now? The giants in the world are subjugated. They smelt, forge, and build in Muspelheim and Niflheim. When their time is done, their blood and their bones are taken to Jotunheim, where they become the network. Every single connection from one computer to another, every bit of data that races across the whole of the gods' domain, all of it is built from the bodies and bones of dead giants. Jotunheim itself is part graveyard, part data center, and all at a scale that is mind-boggling. From above, the streets and pathways look like clusters of neurons. In more ways than one, they are. The whole space grows and changes organically, adding capacity and processing power as needed. The parts of the dead giants that aren't used for computing power are discarded, creating massive cairns of bones and desiccated gristle. It is these places where humanity carves out space for itself. The neighborhoods in Jotunheim are all bent towards common purposes, building, maintaining, and protecting the network. The whole city is connected. The gods use the network to control the population, feeding them a barrage of ads, music, shows, and spectacle. This control means that the gods protect the network almost as carefully as they protect their own strongholds. In addition, Tyr, Thor, and Mimir all have their strongholds within the confines of Jotunheim. So that's the place where y'all wanted to have your town. Your neighborhood.
Sounds so quaint.
Yeah. Now, in every neighborhood entry in the game, there are a few defined notable locations, right? We've got the Jotunheim hub, which is run by Heimdall, the generator, which is run by Thor, the storehouse, which is Mimir. We have a club called Incisors. We have the brain pan, which is a large body of water, so on and so forth. These are all locations with notable NPCs at each that we'll expand upon as needed. There are also neighborhoods. To establish a neighborhood in Iron Edda Reforged, there's an entry that you read, and then all of the players will take turns. You roll a die to establish whether the question you're going to answer has to deal with the past, the present, or the future. Then you'll roll one more die to get a specific question that you will then answer however you want to, right? There are certain things you may run into in Immutable Truth of the setting that I will then relay to you that is not, you know, necessarily included, but you can answer the question however you want to, and the details that you establish in these answers are truth for the world, for our version of the Nine Realms. So, there are a number of neighborhoods in Jotunheim. For this alpha, I have only written an entry for one of them, and the neighborhood that we will be starting in is called Puppet Strings. There was an uprising long ago. No one remembers who started it. It was put down by the gods and their RPB forces quickly and with prejudice. Those who survived fled to the area that became known as Puppet Strings, a massive collection of ligaments and tendons, all linked to cargo and transportation systems throughout Jotunheim. The area was thought to be uninhabitable, but one of the survivors noted a pattern to the movements and began to build. Now, Puppet Strings is a relatively safe portion of Midgard for those who wish the gods ill. Buildings and platforms move and shift seemingly at random. Any outsiders to the neighborhood risk the loss of life and limb trying to navigate through a razor-sharp warren of platforms and cables. Those born here, or who have taken the time to learn, navigate the deadly maze with ease. So this is your home.
I love it.
I love it. I'm here for
it. I want to live there in real life.
Cool.
I mean, not really, because I don't know if I'd really be able to keep my limbs. I'm very clumsy.
Fantastic. Does anyone wish to volunteer to to answer the first question.
Me, pick me.
B's hand is up so high and so fast. So here's how this is going to work. You're going to roll a single d6. 1 and 2 is past, 3 and 4 is present, 5 and 6 is future. Then you roll it one more time to get your specific question. I will read the question out loud. You will answer it however you wish. On slide 3 of our play space, I'm going to write down the question and then the answer so we can all take notes. And then on slide 2, you'll notice that it just says neighborhood creation map and it is otherwise blank. You get to draw something on that map that represents your answer to the questions. Go ahead and roll your die.
That is a 6. I believe that is the future.
A 6. Mists of the future.
If I roll again, that is a 1.
A 1. You're to meet someone tomorrow. Someone with a lead. Where in Puppet Strings do they want to meet? How can you trust them?
They definitely want to meet in one of the most dangerous parts of Puppet Strings. Even residents who live there normally don't ever dwell in this area. The shifting of the platforms and the buildings, it is at a much more accelerated rate. I think maybe a couple of years ago people thought something was broken, but there was no real way to fix it, and it was really still working, just more people tended to die in that area.
What do people call the area colloquially? Like, what's it known as?
I don't know any puppet synonyms. I'm so unfamiliar with puppets in general. I want, like, to play off of puppets or strings.
So I had a twit. I had a pitch, rather. I had a pitch that was not based on puppets, but was based on, like, tendons and ligaments. If it is a particularly chaotic area, perhaps this area of the neighborhood is called the twitch. Because it's like a twitching muscle.
I love that.
That is perfect.
Yeah, I like the implication that there's still like life lingering in this particular collection. And so it's just like this very difficult to navigate sort of maze of razor sharp tendons and ligaments. Wonderful. And how can you trust this person?
Nobody in their right mind would ever want to go to the Twitch. Not even residents who live here want to go to the Twitch. So if you tell me you come at me with the lead and you're like, yeah, let's meet by the Twitch. I'm worried about my life and your life, and therefore I definitely trust you.
If you wanted to kill me, you would pick a safer, you would pick a more reasonable place to do it.
Wonderful. All right, awesome. Then I will let you decide who is going to go next. And while you are doing that, you can then draw something on the map that represents your answer to that question. So Alex or Jeff, who's going next, B?
Alex, go ahead.
Sweet. What kind of a die am I rolling?
A d6.
I just assumed d6, so I wanted to make sure that wasn't just me like stuck in my own game rules.
No, these are all of our game rules. You're fine.
That's a 4.
A 4. So your category is the here and now. Roll one more die.
3.
Now that is a partial success, so you're going to get what you want.
Thank you. Does anybody have something they want to spend to help me out here? Or
a cable snapped 3 hours ago, dumping an entire house. How are you helping in the rescue efforts?
You plural or are you singular?
You tell me. As phrased, it is you, your character. If you wish to include the group as heretofore unestablished.
Yeah, I think I want to do a little bit of sort of early decision making here. Just to show my hand, the book that I am playing has to do with group cohesion anyway. So I think that any answer to this question is going to have to deal with me helping to organize rescue efforts, which I think to me gives a very natural sort of inclination. I think provides us with an excuse to start functioning as a group, even if we weren't already, which is that I think the answer is that all of us are helping. And probably what I am doing is specifically, I think that there's an element of like, anytime you have a rescue effort like this that involves something really tenuous, it's a more sustained effort than anybody really thinks it is. You know, you think it's going to be an emergent thing where like all hands on deck at once. But what really needs to happen is you need to arrange for a way such that like over the next 48 hours, there's somebody there at all times because you don't know what's going to happen. This is a very tenuous situation with like an entire house. And so I think what I am doing is I am sort of bringing people to and from this site. I'm like, you know, making sure that there's somebody there with, like, communicating directly with people who are still in the building, you know, providing whatever our apocalyptic coffee beverage of choice is to people on the ground here. I'm sort of triaging for people who are helping out, but whether that means, you know, going and physically, like, grabbing people and dragging them over here to be an additional pair of hands, or just keeping morale up by being the person who is consistent throughout all these shift changes, that's sort of what I'm envisioning this role being.
So I paraphrased in my notes. So I said, all of the group are helping, and you are coordinating the staffing, quote unquote, and making sure that the carers are cared for.
Yes.
I love it. Love that.
Cool. Awesome. That's delightful. It also reads a lot like you as a person. So, hey, cool. Then while Jeff is going, you can go ahead to slide 2 and you can draw something on the map. And Jeff, roll a d6, please.
That is a 2, so that is the past.
Ties to the past.
And my second D6 is a 3.
A 3. I was glancing through the questions and I kind of hoped you would get this one.
I'm excited that the dice have worked out that way.
You had a vision 9 days ago, a vision of the fall of the gods. What did you see? How did you know the vision was a true one?
I saw perfect stillness. In a city of this size, in a city of this nature, to have stillness and silence, real, honest quiet, and the kind that, like, you don't realize living in the city that you've never really heard before, is an astounding thing. And the visual, the sound, like, the feeling of stillness and silence, coupled with the visual of, like, a single, relatively human-sized body laying on the ground, surrounded by people that look different from one another, and they are not in a uniform, they are not in any sort of visually distinctly, you know, unifying, there's no visual element between them, but you can tell by their posture that they are together, and they are united, and they are defiant, and they are proud, and they are willing to fight, and they have the single body surrounded by bodies. And the way that I know it is true is because I see myself there only for a moment. I see myself there and then I don't. And to reveal my hand a little bit, I am playing a character that is built on shadows and stealth. And well, if I know one thing, it is myself. And if I know one thing about myself, it is that when the job is done, I am nowhere to be found. And so the fact that I only see myself in this vision for a split second before I am gone into the shadows tells me that this is, if not a literal portrayal of the future, is at least accurate enough in the way that it has chosen to portray me that I can feel confident that it is a real thing.
Wonderful. All right. Then if you would follow suit with everybody else and draw something on the map to represent your answer to that question.
B, I'm obsessed with this thing that you drew on the map.
I went looking at the shapes, and I'm like, ooh, street arrows? Yes, this is what I want. Made for a very nice tea to represent the Twitch.
And Alex, I really like how you immediately went, I know there is nothing, there's no one symbol that can represent a snapped cable, so I'm going to use 8 discrete objects.
I will make my own symbol if I have to.
That's right.
It's a group of similar parts coming together to create a more evocative image. It's symbolic.
Okay, wonderful. So we now have that, and Jeff, when you are... Jeff said, I will see your 8 symbols and I will do you twice that many.
It was a difficult thing to illustrate on a map.
Yeah, if you would label it as well, so we have knowledge of what that is. Okay, in a game with more established rules and more questions available, I would also roll a question, but I don't want to complicate things too terrible much, because what we have right now is a decent, like, plot thread for each of your characters going into this, because we have this event that's affecting all of Puppet Strings in the cable snapping. We have B's character needing to meet with an informant at the Twitch, and we have Jeff's character having woken up, I'm gonna guess, woken up by the cable snapping from this vision.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that.
Yeah, so we get to sort of tie all this together, and I think that the moment that contains what you described, Alex, of 3 hours after, here's what I'm doing, that's probably where we're going to pick up the session, is with the immediate fallout of this. So to be able to play a session, y'all need characters. So I've given each of you a PDF that is form fillable. That form should be pretty decent. So here's a rundown of everything that a character in this game has. They do obviously don't have to be completed in this order, but you have a name. You have a role. You already chose all your roles. We did that in Discord at this point in time months ago. You have a gender. The genders in this game are going to be a lot like the genders in Sleepaway, if you're familiar with that game. One of them is a rusty sword, right? Like, that's, they're evocative things that say more about who you are as a person than they do, right, anything else. So every role is going to have a different list of genders. For now, you can literally put whatever you want, whatever seems appropriate to you. You will have attributes, skills, abilities, and a glitch track, and we'll go through all of that. I have a feeling that it being 9:05 now will get to the point where the characters will be wrapped up. We'll talk about what we all want to see for the next slash first session, and then we'll probably sign off, and that'll be everything. So a rundown of the attributes. Attributes are a lot like the 6 stats in D&D, right? These are things that are just sort of true about you. These are not things that get trained up. They're just who you are. Sinew is your physical strength. Bone is your physical toughness. Pulse is your physical quickness. Flex is your mental strength. Core is your mental toughness. And processing is your mental quickness. When I say dice in the text, it means 6-sided dice. You have 15 dice to assign to these attributes. And just a quick breakdown, because a buddy of mine was reading through this and went, you didn't say how many dice is your maximum to put in any one of these. I'm just going to make all processing. I'm going to go all processing and rune binding, baby. I was like, okay, you're going to be really good at one thing. So you, at this point in time, cannot put more than 4 in any one of those physical thing, or one of those 6 things. None of them can go above 4 to start with. Then your skills, there are 12 of those, and those don't really have descriptions to them just yet. Most of them are self-explanatory. I will say that channeling is the use of Vanaheim, which is magic, right? Because the realm of the Vanir, the sort of magical gods that got absorbed into Norse canon way back, that is not a physical place, much like Midgard in this game is not a physical place. There are pockets of Vanaheim throughout every other realm, right? And so there are just places of magical energy that anyone can draw from, should they wish to. There are specific places that are like super magical, and those will be like named locations. But in general, magic kind of permeates this entire thing in the same way that Midgard is wherever the people are. Yes, I absolutely ripped off Thor Ragnarok, and no, I will not apologize for it. And then rune binding is the other form of magic in the game. Channeling is kind of like seer magic in the original Iron Eddas, right? It is broad, pervasive manipulative effects. Rune binding is, I need power now. I'm going to sketch a rune of fire on this thing and try and blow up a door. That sort of deal. And then looking through them, systems is computer systems, right? Which is distinct from mechanics. So there are like physical mechanical things like a car engine. Systems is like the computer that runs the car. So you get 24 dice to assign to those skills. Same deal with the skills. You can't put more than 4 in any given one. To start with, you can have as many 4, you can layer 4s until you only have a few left, but there has to be at least 1 die in each thing. Actually, no, there doesn't, not in the skills. You can have skills that are empty, but they can't go any higher than 4. Because when you are building your die pool to make any, to take any risky action in this game, you pick an attribute and you pick a skill and you pair them together, and that's your die pool. Very Shadowrun vibes with that.
So as characters, what vibes are we thinking? Because I'm more than happy to be the big, beefy, strong one.
Yeah, if you want to refresh for each other what your given roles are and sort of what the bailiwick of those roles is, then yeah, go for it. Plus, you know, not a bad thing to have on radio.
So I'll read out the text that's here for my role. I am playing the Snake, stealth and covert operations. Get in, secure the gasset, and get out. Unsuspected and undetected, this is the way of the Snake. You might use social networking and disguise to work your way into a corporate office. You might don tactical gear and use slicing tools to break into a secured facility hours to find what you need. No matter your approach, you are solid, dependable, and unseen by those who you don't wish to see you. If the job requires stealth, that's your world. Woe betide anyone who disturbs your nest. So I am playing sneaky.
Yeah. I mean, and that kind of informs on like the skills that would be best for you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'll go ahead and read mine down too. That way we can just sort of get some thoughts on everyone. I am playing the Wolf. The Wolf is group cohesion and recruitment. So wolves are the glue that hold their group of friends together. More than a few have the ancient phrase, the pack is all, held in a place of honor in their home or tattooed on their body. I definitely do. Their abilities involve teamwork, setting up their allies for success, and tending to those they care about. They aren't the face of any given group. That honor is reserved for sparrows, but they do have a tendency to bring in the most recruits for the fight against the gods. So yeah, I'm kind of seeing myself as like a support class. You know, I think that having, like, when you were talking about rune binding, I think that would be super cool. I like the idea of kind of having this, like, scrappy sort of magic system that's very much like, I'm not trained in this, you know, I'm a street medic. Like, I can write a rune on something and make do if I have to, but that's kind of the extent of it. That's sort of where I'm seeing my build going, is, like, having a few practical skills sort of spread out, not really being a specialist at any one thing, but sort of patching up holes where I can.
I'm sorry, did you say street medic?
I did say street magic.
I am playing a bone bonded. The gods didn't just take the bodies and bones of the giants for their networks. They also took the giant spirits and harnessed them. Vast, chained intelligence. The giants are the backbone of the network in all ways that matter, but not all of them stay chained. I am so hyped for this. Humanity, in its effort to overthrow the gods, has found a way to ally with the rogue giants in the system. These boned are walking, live connections to the network. These giants navigate the human host as easily as the human navigates the network. The symbiotic relationship is a strange and powerful dynamic. I get to decide what giant I'm bonded to. I get to give them a name. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to come up with a voice for them.
That, or you can, so a couple ways we can handle it. You can just ask me to play the giant at any point in time, and I will voice them. I'll just play them like an NPC. Or you can easily speak for both of them, and in post-production editing I will speak over their lines or give them a big filter.
Oh, hell yeah.
That would be cool as heck.
Read the last two paragraphs if you don't mind.
In addition to your character details, you also decide the details for the giant who you are bonded to. You need to choose the giant's name and define three details about them. Unlike most details in Iron Edda Reforged, these details are more or less permanent. Being a dead being has locked certain aspects of the giant firmly in place. It would take an immense event to change the giant's basic nature. That's cool. Having the spirit of a dead giant living in your head is no trivial matter. As such, when you roll glitch dice, the narrator consults a special table for you and just your giant. Oh no. Thank you for having me read the whole thing.
You're welcome. So a couple of things that are important. There's a legacy line in that paragraph that doesn't matter as much, but the important thing is the word details, right? Details in this game are like aspects in a game of Fate, right? So they're short descriptive phrases that are true. However, there are no permanently written down details, right? You'll notice your character sheet doesn't have a spot for them. So, like in Fate, to spend a control point, you need to highlight a detail, which they call invoking an aspect. But, like a game of Cortex Plus, you just get to name what the detail is in that moment, because I want to, the goal of this mechanically is that the context of a given moment is more important than something else you're bringing in with you, right? So in our play space, on the little card things that we have, right, you'll write down a detail. That detail is only going to matter for that scene, you know, so it'll stick around for that scene, just like an aspect wouldn't fade or a boost might. But when that scene is over, those details are going to go away. You know, the things you carry with you are the glitches that you pick up. And that's a whole new system for stress. We'll see if it functions the way I hope it does. But yeah, so that's it's going to require a little bit more active thinking and sort of visualizing the narrative space that we're playing in. But that's kind of the point.
Hyped for that.
But the giant will have three details that are more or less permanent because, you know, when you're dead, change comes a lot more difficult to you.
So remind me one more time. We have 24 dice for the skills, but for the attributes, we're working with 15. Okay.
15. Yeah. Yep. And that in your attributes, you have to have at least one in all of the attributes, but skills can have zeros in them because you can have just no training in some of the skills.
Cool.
I'm probably not going to be very stealthy. I might just take a zero in stealth. Just going to put that one out there.
Sure.
Jeff, are you leaning towards channeling?
I'm putting 2 points into channeling.
Okay.
That vision, the prompt of the vision is so evocative to me that I kind of want to lean into that a little bit.
I love that.
Now that I'm talking through it, I'm leaning on two ways. I like the idea of leaning into that a little bit and having it be something that, like, I'm familiar with, but I also kind of like the idea of putting no points into it and having that vision be something completely foreign and alien to me. That, because, like, now you're getting a Jeff Stormer All My Fantasy Children character monologue or character explanation, so get
we
ready.
We love to see it. I'm ready.
I invited you for a reason, Jeff Stormer.
First off, I feel very attacked that you have given me a prompt that has forced me to turn my character into an ever optimistic, driven, fierce idealist. Wasn't where I was going to go. I wasn't gonna be a parody of myself. And now here I am.
Oh, I see. I just committed to that from the beginning.
Now I'm trapped. You've pulled me back into being typecast as the character that I always play. But I love the idea that this vision that my character had is, like, very kind of foundational to them, right? Like, this is something really important to them. It's something that, like, really define, like, and I'm trying to decide if it's a bigger moment for someone that, like, is familiar with this and kind of knows the rhythms of it a little bit, which would mean putting some points into channeling, or if it's a bigger moment for somebody that, like, has no experience into this area and has had this thing happen that they, like, didn't really put any thought into. I kind of am going both ways, so I'm gonna think on it a little bit. So the answer to that question a minute and a half later is maybe.
Excellent. I guess I'm curious, what is everybody going to take the fours in if you're maxing out anything?
I think I'm going to max out insight. That makes sense to me.
Okay. I'm going to take a one there, so that's perfect.
And let me think.
So, and something to consider, because I already really like how you're thinking, like, strategically about everyone's skills be. That's, like, emergent gameplay. Fantastic. I love it. The game is also not designed for there to be balance between all the roles.
Okay.
Right. So kind of the model from Dresden Files Accelerated is that in the world, there are beings that are just more powerful, right? If you're playing a wizard, you are more powerful in many applications than the journalist. However, the journalist has access to resources that the wizard does not. So efficacy in a given situation is all about context. So if you end up with a couple of people who are extremely just bashy and run into situations, fantastic. You're doing that together while someone else is hanging back and doing something else. But part of my job as the narrator is to set up situations that are interesting for everybody involved. So if you want to think about that and, like, cover as many bases as you can, fantastic. If you don't want to, you don't have to do that. So that was all a digression to tell you that you are doing fabulously and you can keep doing what you're doing, but, you know, you can approach it any way you please.
Okay. I mean, I love failing forward. So I'm taking some very intentional zeros.
Yeah, I took some zeros. I took some zeros that, like, felt like the right call for my character. But like, at the same time, this is actually not always how I approach games, so this is an unusual experience for me, but like, there, I was really excited when you kind of started to ask, like, what skills we were filling in. Like, I think, and this is kind of exposing, here's some game design, some playtest chatter, some actual real session zero talk, y'all, get ready. I'm finding a little bit of that, like, that squad play, for lack of a better way to put it, feels really appealing to me here in the session zero space of, like, we're a cool team who are gonna do cool things together, and so, like, while I don't want to necessarily, like, push it super hard and kind of, like, you know, I want that space for us to kind of dictate character decisions that feel right, even if they kind of set us up at disadvantages. Like, there's an element of, like, building things that complement each other so that we can come together to do cool stuff feels really appealing to me.
Nice. And I'll also, since B, you mentioned failing forward, mechanically, if you put yourself in a risky situation that requires a die roll, yes, you can fail, right? And there are PBTA style, right? If you don't get what you need on the roll, you can choose to take success at a cost, and we negotiate what that is, right? And there's regular success, and if you do really well, you get a bonus. But because there are no permanent details, unlike fate, there's also nothing for me to compel,
mm-hmm.
right? So to get control points, which is what I'm calling fate points, to get control points back when you would be in a position to take a risky action and roll the dice, you instead choose failure.
I think you've made this whole game just for me. I love failing.
That's really cool.
I may have. And when you choose failure, you get a control point, right? You get the currency that lets you, you know, do better on other things. But I'm not in charge of that. One of the weirdest negotiation points of fate for me is saying, I think you should do this counterintuitive thing or this thing that provides a wrinkle because this aspect on your sheet says it mm-hmm. can be read this way, right? I think it's much more interesting when a player walks into a situation and I say, okay, this person has heard of you and they're drawing their gun, you know, to challenge you to a duel. What do you do? Well, I think they shoot me. Cool. Have a control point. You know what I mean? That. Like that's a lot more interesting to me than me trying to decide that. So that's one of the things that I'm testing out with this system is, does the economy of spending points and getting them back function in a satisfying way when you have to choose failure to get?
I like that. Really does help us inform on like where to not put a lot of points into as well, because those are ways that we can exploit that mechanic and mm-hmm. kind of put ourselves into trouble.
Yeah.
Right. And does it, and you have to then decide, is it narratively, like, do I choose to fail the role when I'm in a non-optimal situation to get a control point, or is it more narratively interesting for me to try?
This has all convinced me to not put points into channeling.
and
the reason being, I think it's really interesting for a character that has become really interested in a field of magic to have this sort of foundational moment to start kind of pursuing that a little bit, but like, there's a lot that space for failure in sort of this world of magic that I am unfamiliar with, that I've had this kind of foundational experience in, is super interesting to me. There's a lot of interesting failures there, and there's an interesting experience of it's an area that I want something that I'm not, that I don't have the skills for. Feels like an interesting wanting point. It feels like there's an interesting, like, I want in that moment.
Nice.
The after sorted out. I'm still figuring out my skills. Like, is anybody going to be good at driving? I don't think I believe in vehicles a lot.
I have two.
I gave myself a 3 in vehicles. That, I don't know, that seemed like something that I would be able to do. If I were recruiting people and trying to get them to join the cause, it seems useful to have a way to get them there.
Yeah. That feels right.
I've been going back and forth on vehicles. In a very big way.
This is amazing. I'm here for vehicle chat.
I've been going back and forth because there's two very appealing options for my snake of a character. There's two very appealing options. And one is having 2 points in vehicles because I'm really, really good at driving. Like, I'm comfortable driving, like, my vehicle. And I love the trope of the person having the vehicle that is theirs and no one touches it. Brock Sampson with his sports car is very near and dear to me. I also love the idea of not putting things in vehicles and making it a conscious plot point of like, oh, I don't drive. It's not something that I do. It's not something that I have any interest in. I'm not doing it. Those are both interesting options to me. So I have to do a little bit of thinking on which one of them makes me smile more and which one of them is more interesting to me in play.
If it helps your decision making, I was leaning heavily towards the I don't drive. I don't need to. I'm above that. You know.
Then I think that does help my decision because I think I want to push in. Actually does not help at all because the idea of role of being of pairing of bouncing off of you in agreement and disagreement, both fun options to me.
Right. Can you imagine? We just have to rely on, I think, are you the, Alex, you're the wolf or the snake?
Yeah, I'm the wolf.
Wolf. I just like love rely, like, we gotta go somewhere. Where's the wolf? Like, if you're not there, we cannot go anywhere. We'll just crash into a wall.
Yeah, it is really fun to me to have both of us be like, can't drive. I don't wanna do it.
I think it could be very funny. I'm super here for it. I think it's hilarious. I kind of love if, you know, part of the, because I think, I know we're not looking to like intentionally inject humor into this game, but there's something very situationally funny to me about taking the trope of like team recruiter and like, you know, the that person and like interpreting that trope as like soccer mom. Mm-hmm.
It's just, I do love like, that.
Very funny to me.
I was just going to say, do you have a mom van?
I think I've landed on what is the most fun option to me, and that is putting points into vehicles and like having the capability and then choosing not to is fun to me.
Can I pitch you something? And I know we're spending a lot of time on one skill check in like the middle of three character books, but can I pitch you on something? Mm-hmm. I think it's very funny if you are like super particular about, like, you don't really drive that often, but you are super particular about vehicles and you have like your one car, because the way I'm picturing my character is very much like, we'll drive anything. Like, I have a vehicle skill, and what I mean by that is like, come on, we need to go, I just hotwired a bus. Like, I think it, that's funny to me.
I love that, and I think the vibe that I want is that like, I am a capable driver. And I just don't like doing it. So like, I tell people, I'm like, no, I don't drive. I don't do it. But then it sets up, there's a fun moment to me of like, when that character gets behind a wheel and is just like effortlessly like, well, all right, I'm driving now. It's like, well, then why didn't you do this all along?
Why haven't you been driving this entire time?
Because I don't enjoy it.
So the thing that I wanted to say as a capper to this is very early stuff, and I'm very willing to read tea leaves on this. I really like that kind of conversation that y'all just had about one stat and whether to put points in it or not, because that's the kind of thing that aspects would normally, you know, handle in a game, and they don't need to, right? You don't need to define this one particular thing. If it never comes up again, oh well. If you don't remember why your driving skill is what it is, that's fine. But it's for me, it's now a seed inside of you. And when you're thinking about the character, it may come up and be super important in that moment and be a thing of like, since when do you hate driving? Right. It's a whole conversation that can happen. So I love it. I'm extremely, extremely happy about this.
I think these are my final numbers.
I think I feel good about my numbers.
Okay. Wonderful.
I think these are my final numbers. I think I feel good about these. Yeah, I think I feel good about them. I'm in my head. I'm thoughtful. I'm engaging with a lot of things in my head, but I think I'm good.
Very cool. I'm just like as the game writer, like looking through this and seeing where like the peaks come, because mathematically thinking about where you set difficulties based on how many dice are in your pool is like an important thing to know how to do. So if you have eight dice in your pool, right? Mm-hmm. If you're rolling a four and a four, then you have a 25 point something percent chance to get four successes. And I think I said in a later section, I think I said that five successes is like a really challenging thing. Like it's near impossible to do. So I think at least napkin math, that checks out.
That feels right. A 25% chance of almost achieving like a supernaturally cool thing, or like an impossibly difficult thing feels good.
Yeah, on eight dice, five successes is an 8.7% chance. So like very, very slim chance.
But a non-zero chance.
But that's what control points are for. Also, sixes explode, which is not taken into account in any of that probability table that I was just looking at. Yeah, sixes explode and you just get to roll them again. You basically get to add another die to your pool every time you roll a six. So in theory, everyone has a chance to succeed at anything, because that's your swingy wild card is exploding sixes. So, all right, all the numbers are in.
Alex, can we talk about your zero in fighting?
Listen, what? I'm good at what I'm good at, and I'm not good at what I'm not good at.
Oh my god, and in shooting. Oh, this is gonna be good.
I just kind of assumed that you all would take fighting skills, and I would be doing other stuff while it happened.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah. Will you pronounce your character's name, please?
Idis.
Idis. Idis Folk. Wonderful. I love it.
You are not. What is. Jeff!
Hell yeah.
You would pick a great name.
So my character's name is Ronnie Kurt, and my nickname is Captain Kurt.
Captain.
It's not Captain, and if you call me Captain, I will correct you. It is Captain.
I would just like to point out that an hour ago, you were the one on this call saying, I don't want it to be comedy for comedy's sake. I think if it naturally evolves as a course of the story, it's fine if we find ourselves there. But the one thing I just really want to avoid at all costs is that we're just trying to be ridiculous here.
I'm not trying
That's
to
not
be
the tone that I'm going for. I'm just not interested in telling that kind of story.
That is fair. I accept this. I'm going to live in it. I'm going to own it. I'm going to hold it here, and I'm going to breathe.
Skewered.
I feel I was dunked upon, and I have to own that.
And note that he's not changing the name.
No, certainly not. I would never expect him to.
Because I don't imagine that Captain's going to come up that like his name is Ronnie, but I like having the
name. It's absolutely fine. So B, can we talk about your giant?
Yes, please.
All right. So I don't have a spot as of yet for I have, there's a whole sheet that says bone bonded on number 5 that is a leftover from the previous game that Jeff and I were playing. So I'm just going to erase those things, leave the name bone bonded, and change the font size up a little bit and make it darker. So giant name. I'm going to run this past you, B. There are 3 details that need to be developed for the giant. There are 3 people on this call who are not you. What would you think about you giving a general description of your giant's demeanor and sort of personality, and then letting each one of us come up with one of the details? Okay, fantastic. And Jeff and Alex, are you both okay with that?
1,000%. Yeah.
Fantastic.
They are the polar opposite of me. They are cunning, stealthy, smart, crafty, haughty, arrogant. Those are the vibes that I'm getting for this bone bonded. And they definitely crave power. That's just a classic.
Oh, haughty with a G-H. I wouldn't have very...
H-A-U. Yeah, they can also be a haughty. So with that vibe...
Okay.
Do either of you have something that is coming to mind?
What kind of detail are we looking for? Like, what things are useful?
Mainly, these are things that B, as a player, would be able to spend control points on when the giant is active, right? They're just sort of more set in stone, so we have a really good idea of how this giant is going to behave. Because with if it were a non-giant NPC... we would be deciding things about them. So this is sort of the same kind of deal. We just want something established so we can know what about the giant is useful or detrimental in a given situation. And as you're saying that and asking that question, like, it's already occurring to me that maybe that's not the right move for the system, but we're in alpha mode right now, so I'm not going to like engage design brain yet. I'm just going to let it ride.
Is there an instance in this world or this setting where it would be useful to have access to a creature with the ability to act sort of like a Rosetta Stone for our group? Like, does it speak multiple languages or dead dialects, or does it understand code that we don't understand? Like, is that something that would be interesting 100%. Or useful?
Yeah, so the giants are essentially your entire computer network, right? They've been, so this is very much like the Matrix vibes. Imagine the giants as the rogue programs, mm-hmm. like the Merovingian mm-hmm. or the Keymaster, mm-hmm. or the Oracle, right? They have their own agenda. And for whatever reason, they've chosen to, and in this game, it's a choice for the giant to be bonded to a human. It's not, they're ripped out of oblivion like in War of Metal and Bone. So this is a purposeful choice on the giant's part. So the giant wants to accomplish something. Ostensibly, the same goal as the characters, take down the gods. So I think the idea of being like a universal translator or, a code breaker is a great idea.
That's my pitch.
I like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you want to phrase that into an aspect like detail? Or If you would like assistance with that, that's one. It's kind of a superpower that I have. So
I'm totally down for having, you know, as many hands on this ball as possible. That's just sort of my loose concept. So however that makes sense to phrase it in a way that's going to, you obviously have like a much more cohesive understanding of how this might come up than I do. So however you want to phrase it in a way that is gameplay savvy would be great.
If it has been spoken, I can speak it.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's a cool phrase. So I have a concept or a detail that I'm going to drop in the doc. I'm going to drop a detail in the doc, and I'm going to phrase it as a 1,000 plans, one objective. Because my immediate thought hearing B's pitch was like the idea of almost like a Doctor Who-esque, like plans upon plans upon plans upon plans, like Batman style, like infinite. Then I kind of like pushed against that a little bit and thought, like, if it's that type of A, mentality, and B, skill set, and C, drive and motivation, but rather than be like, I'm trying to achieve all of these different things and play this game, it's like, I want one thing. And we can talk through what we think that one thing is, if it is as broad as to destroy the gods, and or as narrow as like, I'm after one thing, like I'm after one piece of this puzzle. But the idea that like I have put into place 1,000 plans to achieve the one very specific thing that I want, and if plan 846 doesn't work, well then we'll go with plan 419. Like if plan nine from outer space doesn't work, then we'll go with plan 980.
I like that it's not consecutive, you know, it's just yeah. You pick a number.
Gotta keep them guessing.
It's constant, it's constant momentum, right? Like it's this constant sense of like it is pure kind of motivation, in the sense of it is like there is no assessment of failure or success. It is simply this thing happened, and therefore it is time for the next thing.
Kind of a relentlessness to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to the kind of supernatural degree of like my job is to formulate these plans. I am simply going to dispense them until one of them works.
All right. And the last one is I am the smoke, I am the screen.
Tell me about that one.
So you said that they are stealthy and subtle, where you are absolutely not. And because they are technology in this context, right? So they are pervasive, they are everywhere, they can be hidden in plain sight. Yeah. So that's the goal behind that one. So yeah. And then what do you want to name your giant, B?
Oh, no, I had an old Norse name generator pulled up. but I can just feel them constantly being disappointed in me. Let's go with Groa. G-R-O-A.
Something that's really...
To grow.
Something that, like, a possibility, and feel free to not run with this now or in play, but, like, there's an energy that I get from this sort of pervasive, constantly planning and constantly scheming thing that, like, even if they are like disappointed on you in one level, like I get this vibe that like there's always a place for, like there's always a, you know what I mean, there's always a nail that needs hammered. Like there's this energy of like I don't like you, I disagree, I don't like your energy, but damn it if I don't have hundreds of different opportunities to use your exact skill set. And they might not always be in the way that you maybe perceive using them, but like there's that sense of like you're always useful. It's just finding the way to use whatever it is that you bring to the table.
I think Groa calls me a tool a lot in both senses of the words.
I love it. Love it a lot.
Oh, fantastic. Well, wonderful. We now, at the end of all of this, we have generated our notes from neighborhood creation, right? We've established the place in which this story is going to occur. We have some inciting incidents.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I would love to hear everyone's gender and look tags if you have them. I'm very curious to see what people came up with.
I'm not there yet.
Please.
Oh, it's okay. If you have it, that's totally fine. I won't rush it.
I have mine. I wrote Dine and Dash on my character sheet. And my characters, Ronnie's pronouns are he, they, but I think his gender is the mix of thrilling exhilaration and profound disappointment when you realize you haven't paid a bill at your favorite restaurant and you decide not to walk back inside and just leave.
That's awesome. For my gender, I put black instant coffee in a tin cup.
I love it.
Because I think it's that combination of like being both a comforting, practical presence while also being like not the prettiest package. Like there's something profoundly utilitarian mm-hmm. about having black instant coffee in a tin cup. But it's also like sometimes that's what you need, you know? So that's the experience of mm-hmm. this character.
I love it. Those, by the way, are both going to become canonical in the book as part of the snake and the wolf role.
For my look, I put bandage core because that felt right.
That is very fitting. So far for gender, all I've really got is like ground up bone dust.
That's metal as hell.
That is right? Profoundly cool.
Uh-huh. It's just like it's gritty. There's work involved. It's bone dust. Like it felt very yeah. them.
So for my look, I wrote down immaculate dirtbag.
What does that mean?
It means that it shouldn't work is what how I visualize it in my head. Ronnie's look is that like it looks like they it looks simultaneously like depending on the angle that you look at them, it looks like they either threw together the worst combination of things. But if you look at them at just the right angle, it becomes apparent that they spent like an immaculate amount of time like cultivating the look of someone that doesn't care.
Oh, that's wonderful. Random question that will inform on my look. What is the temperature like generally?
City in early summer. Like that's the general. It's kind of muggy. It's a lot of city smell. 98.6 degrees.
I don't know Farron.
In Jotunheim, okay. Right? That's whatever your temperature is when you take your temperature in Canada, right? Your body
do
temperature.
Do that in Fahrenheit? But like our temperature is in Celsius, so I gotta convert it.
Yeah. But I mean, you're living in an area that is literally comprised of once living matter. It's not always that warm, but it's that kind of oppressive feeling throughout Jotunheim, right? It's not always that hot, but it's not necessarily a comfortable place to be. You find moments of comfort, but the thing about Midgardian spaces throughout the Nine Realms is that they are carved out of the realms as the gods want them to be, right? So all of them are non-ideal places to be living. And perhaps one of the goals as you all go on is to make a space that is more ideal, right? Maybe that's one of the reparatory things that you end up doing throughout all of this is like making Midgard a more permanent place in the world again. Because it's not right now.
Oh, 36 degrees Celsius is awful. So I definitely, uh-huh. I wear like a vest. I've got these beautiful pecs and like I never technically wear a shirt, but the vest counts as a shirt. So when I step into a place that's like, no shoes, no shirt, I'm like, I got a vest on. It works. And I'm probably just like slightly glistening at all times because like I don't like that temperature.
Mm-hmm. So you have just described the aesthetic of a professional wrestler, and I need that noted. Specifically the glistening and the vest.
A professional wrestler named Bone Dust. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Do you know when you said Bone Dust, I almost went, Bone Dust is ready.
Oh my gosh.
I love it. I'm here for it. I love all of this. This is very good.
All right. So we are close to coming up against time. So I know we're not going to be playing yet, I still want to give a brief rundown of system stuff and how this sort of works, just to have it in your head when we do play. So you've got your attributes, you have your skills. Every role also has abilities. Each of you only has one ability per rank written down right now. At the beginning of any given scene, you will decide if you are committing dice to your abilities or not. If you choose not to commit dice to your abilities, that's not available during that scene. If you decide to commit dice, then you will take a number from an attribute or a skill. You'll reduce the attribute or skill by one for every die you want to commit. And you can commit up to 6 dice. Rank 1 takes a die, rank 2 takes 2 dice, rank 3 takes 3 dice. So for example, B, if you walk into a scene and you're like, I'm not going to be summoning the bones. It's just not going to happen this time. Then you will not put dice in that and you won't be able to, right? It just is not available to you during that scene. You can also only have one ability at any point in time. So part of advancement will be there'll be multiple abilities of each rank and you'll have to choose which ability and do I want to commit to it, right? Again, we'll see if this actually functions because it may take your die pools too low to actually do much of anything. But the abilities are pretty fucking cool, right? So I'm on Alex's right now. Rank one is you've got this. Once per scene, when one of your allies takes an action, they take two of their die pool and set them to successes before they roll. Say how your efforts ensure those successes, right? Rank two, I know someone. Once per scene, you can call on the help of an NPC to get you into or out of a tight situation. If this is a new NPC, go through the procedure to create them, see page blah blah blah. After the scene where you call upon that NPC's help, you owe them a favor that must be repaid. At most, you can owe three such favors for this ability to function. And then rank three is pack tactics. Once per session, you can call on the personnel and supplies you've been keeping in reserve. For the rest of the scene you are in, every time you spend a control point, it is worth one extra success. When you spend a control point in this way, highlight a detail that relates to the reserves upon which you are calling.
That's very cool.
So, right, it's literally your materiel that you bring to bear. So it's a lot of really cool shit, but it also means that your flexibility is limited because you have a specific ability locked in for that scene. The other, let's see, looking through, just trying to see if there's anything I haven't missed yet. Control points let you reroll your misses. Again, very Shadowrun. I literally just cribbed the system from Shadowrun for the basic die rolls for this. The main thing, glitches. So when you fail an action or choose to fail or take success at a cost, sometimes I'll give you glitch dice. Those dice go in the glitch track, right? And on the next action that you take after getting them, you have to roll those dice in addition to your other dice. They're not part of your pool. They don't count to your successes, but you have to roll them. Any six you get on a glitch die locks the glitch die in your track. So it's like taking stress. It's going to last, right? The other thing that happens, if you get other results, right, there may be other narrative things that occur that I haven't written the tables for those yet, and your bone bonded gets special ones. So on. But, you know, things go twitchy when that happens. If you get three dice in your glitch track, you glitch for the first time. You clear your glitch track, and all of your dice change from D6s to D8s. But you take two dice from your attributes and two dice from your skills. So you lose efficacy, but your overall ability potentially increases, right? Your ability to succeed goes big. If you glitch again, it goes to D10s. If you glitch for a third time, you're taken out. You're out of the scene. Depending on the context, that could mean death. It could not. But that's the idea, is that you can push and you just keep, it's like you're going plus ultra the whole time until all your steam runs out, right? You give everything that you can and then you're done. So you lose flexibility, but you gain overall potential as you keep glitching. Also, when you glitch, you can decommit dice from your abilities if you wish to. So like if you glitch and you're like, oh, I don't want to summon the bones anymore, you can pull those three back into your attributes and skills.
I like that. Okay.
Yeah, that's the general way that all of that works. That's the system in a nutshell. So yeah, anytime you attempt something risky, you build a pool, you roll.
Love it.
We see what happens. So we only have a little bit of time left. So is there anything else that you all would like to ask real quick before we call this an evening?
Nothing comes to mind. Actually, there is one thing. I had one thing that I had a big question about from a thoughtful storytelling standpoint. What's the vibe around channeling? I guess it's like this is a half an ask and half like a desire to kind of state the sort of story that I'm interested in telling around it. Do you have a picture of like, is it something more like organized? Is it something more like that you kind of just figure out on your own? Like, what are you envisioning as sort of the way that people engage with the magic of channeling?
Sure. So I will say rune binding is sort of like the every person's magical ability, right? Like the way Alex envisioned it. Like you can literally just draw a letter and imbue it with intention and it does shit. Channeling is a much more deliberate ritualistic kind of thing. People can come at it in their own ways. Like seer magic in the original Ironetta stuff, it is sometimes distrusted because it is seen as pulling from the god's power, because technically it is. So in some parts of Midgard, because remember, each of these realms, Jotunheim is vast. It's bigger than New York. It's like the Toronto, New York, Jersey megalopolis. Like it's massive. And every realm is this large, and yet you can still get from one to another very easily because magic. So there may be groups and cults and sects that like are cool with it, who use it for bad ends. It's kind of a personal thing. So to that end, I'll ask you to think about how it's viewed in Puppet Strings specifically. And then we'll go from there, because it's going to vary from locale to locale.
Because I'm thinking in terms of, like, I was thinking about the channeling stuff that we were talking about earlier, and I'm really into that, but I don't want it to veer into the story of a person trampling into a culture or a practice or like a system that they do not have experience in and claiming ownership. So I just am thinking out loud in terms of, like, I'm more interested in a story of, like, somebody discovers something or has a moment where that, like, changes their view of the world, and they don't have the tool set to grasp at it yet, but the desire to figure that out. I think this is just me kind of stating my yeah. own, like, intentions for how I want to explore this thing, but that's the story that interests me, is like I had this moment, this very kind of foundational thing that's going to drive a lot of, like, how I perceive this character. I don't have the words for it. I don't have the tools for it. I don't like, this is new to me, but I'm not trying to, like, claim ownership of it. I'm trying to figure out how it relates to me.
Yeah, I think we can definitely tell that in a non-appropriative way. I will say that it's probably not, like, frowned upon in Puppet Strings, but there aren't a lot of practitioners.
That's cool. I'm cool with that. That kind of fits into the story that I'm envisioning, or, like, the vibe that I'm interested in chasing. Cool.
Okay. Well, then that wraps up this episode. Thank you all so, so, so very much. And we can all hit stop on our recordings.
Iron Edda Reforged is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network in conjunction with the Other Dev Productions. Written and designed by Tracy Barnett, performed by Alex Flanagan, B. Zelda, and Jeff Stormer. Editing by Jupiter. If you enjoyed this show, you should check out some of the other shows on the One Shot Podcast Network, like One Shot. On One Shot, you can discover new RPGs through actual play. Every week, James D'Amato brings you a new episode with a rotating cast of improvisers, game designers, and other notable nerds. One Shot has featured over 100 games, exploring a wide variety of genres and tones. The stories are self-contained, so you can jump in anywhere, and it's a great way to find your new favorite game. Discover the magic of RPGs with One Shot on your favorite podcast app. And the editor ain't bad either.